Okay, so the first two parts, as we've discussed, we spoke about how to learn a sugya in order to prepare a halacha shir. Second part was how to prepare the actual shir, not just the sugya. And now a little bit about presentation. The thing about presentation of halacha is that I think it's not really about presentation of halacha per se. The yesodos are about presentation of everything. Meaning, the yesodos of presentation are the yesodos of presentation, regardless, even in non-Torah subjects. You know, you have to be engaging, and you have to, all of the normal rules of presentation. So I wasn't sure exactly what to say on this topic, but we're going to make 6 points. And then we'll call it a day. And obviously, I invite your feedback. And while we're schmoozing here and afterwards, don't be shy. If it's the recorder that makes you afraid to talk, this doesn't have to go anywhere. It doesn't have to be posted in Y.U. Torah. It won't embarrass you or anything like that. Okay, so let's get started. So 6 points I want to make. First of all, and I think it's probably evident to all, many of these things are probably evident to all of you, but first is the opening. You start with the opening. So just like when you when the rabbi gives a drasha in shul, he's pasuk b'milsa d'beduchusa, he starts with a joke or a story or something or some sort of hook. Anytime you speak anywhere or you give any sort of shir, there's got to be some sort of a hook. With halacha, the hook is usually pretty easy because it's real life. So there's something that makes it inherently interesting. So you should always think about in advance what's going to make this interesting to people. Is it a unique shaila? Is it the fact that it's something in the news? And therefore, meaning people may not have cared about abortion at all, but then Roe v. Wade gets overturned, or might get overturned, and all of a sudden everyone cares about abortion, and what does Judaism really have to say about it? And all of those things can make something that wasn't interesting very interesting. Personally, I think going the Rav Yitzchak Silberstein method of having an actual halachic shaila to begin with, he has crazy ones and he builds them up and makes them into whole stories and whatever. So that's great. That's really nice. It makes it very geschmack. It makes it very interesting. It makes people debate the topics. For example, you want to give a shir on the bracha of Mishana Habrios, right? That you see someone unusual and you make a bracha of Mishana Habrios. So you could say, okay, we're going to talk about the bracha of Mishana Habrios. And then at the end, you'll give examples of when you say the bracha, when you don't say the bracha. Or you could say, there's this one time I met Shaquille O'Neal, and I felt like I had to say some sort of bracha on him. The guy is a mountain. He's just so someone actually asked me that shaila. Someone told me that they were doing a business deal on some real estate in New Jersey, and Shaq and his team were investors or whatever in the deal. And the guy that was telling me when he met Shaq, he said, "Don't worry, Rabbi, I said a bracha." I'm like, "Well, wait, why did you say a bracha? What bracha did you say?" But he was sure that he had to say a bracha. So that's a better hook than saying Be'inyan Mishana Habrios, to actually introduce it with a shaila that actually happened. You can say, I'm going to talk about the sugya of Maisa Shabbos, getting hana'ah from halacha that was done on Shabbos. Or you could say, well, I was on a Pesach program, and then out of nowhere, Donald Trump shows up to the Pesach program, and all of a sudden, all these Jews start pulling out their phones on Yontif, videoing Donald Trump. But they were this actually happened, right? So can I watch those videos now after Yontif? Because I'm in some of them. And there I was, sitting front and center, as Donald Trump was speaking at my Pesach program, that he'll be advertised, next to the rabbis and the musicians next to in the ads. So that makes the whole sugya of Maisa Shabbos something that people are much more likely to want to learn in order to be able to understand the answer to that question. Now, granted, you are still very young, and probably people don't ask you too many halachic shailas. Hopefully, people don't ask you too many halachic shailas. But there are these stories that are out there that you can use, or you can use creativity to form a story. And when you start with a shaila lemaisa, you start with some real life situation. The advantage that it gives whoever you're teaching, whoever you're learning with, it gives them the opportunity to form an opinion. Meaning, when you, let's say, take that Donald Trump situation, before anyone knows anything about Simon Shin Yuchas and Archaim, before anyone knows anything about three-way Machlokas Tanayim, about Maaseh Shabbos, they've already formed an opinion, whether you're allowed to watch or not. So, okay, share with me your opinion. Why do you think that way? And then it also allows you to demonstrate that your opinion, if it's not based on anything, in the world of halacha, is meaningless. Meaning it's not, meaning I feel, really? I mean, like, so, but you can demonstrate how opinions are formed in halacha. It's not based on, you know, well, you got to be allowed to do that, or there's no way you should be allowed to do it. I mean, it's got to be based on, it's just like the way you tell if someone's a Talmud Chacham or not. Rosh Hashanah always tells us, when you talk and learning with someone, if someone gives a lot of good svaras, but he doesn't have any mar makomos to back them up, that is not a Talmud Chacham, right? If someone has the mar makomos to back them up, then you know that that's a Talmud Chacham. Someone is able to quote you Gemaras and Rishonim and sources to back up what they say. But that gives you the opportunity to demonstrate how an opinion in halacha is formed versus an opinion about, your favorite baseball team or something. And that's part of teaching halacha, is to show that opinions have to be educated opinions. You know, Rav Shechter once said that in halacha, he doesn't like the phrase l'aniyus daiti, because if you're paskening me'aniyus hadas, then you're not paskening correctly. You have to pasken me'ashiras hadas. So that's Aleph. So again, we said we're going to discuss six things. So one thing about presentation is, I think the way you start is very important, that you have to start with something that is a hook and makes it engaging, and ideally will allow people to start thinking about how they're going to form their opinion already at the outset before they've learned anything. The second thing is just in terms of using your voice effectively. I don't know why some people have it and some people don't, meaning some people naturally have it and some people really need to work on it, but there are some people that just are so monotonous and boring in their voice, and it's not even a lack of avas haTorah. A lot of times everything else in their life suggests that they really, really love Torah, meaning they'll spend 16 hours a day in the Beis Medrash learning. You don't do that unless you're madly in love with the Torah. But somehow, when they start teaching Torah or sharing Torah, it sounds like they're getting a root canal. Meaning it's awful. So it's important to be cognizant of that how you express yourself, and this stam in speaking in general, especially in public speaking. Although Chabur is not, is not public speaking. That's just that's teaching Torah in a more intimate setting. It's much more like this, and much less like standing in front of like Rav Ephraim Waxman at the Asifa in wherever they had in Philadelphia, like in front of 20,000 people. But in public speaking or in any type of speaking, how you express yourself in terms of decibel level, in terms of speed, in terms of emphasis, like these things really matter. Now, I'll tell you that some people who doesn't come naturally to and who work on it sound weird when they start working on it, because like it sounds like a little too by the book. It sounds like you could see in the notes Ray's voice here. But it's worthwhile, because after a while they'll see the audience feedback and they'll be able to realize what's working, what's not. There are some people that think in order to be dynamic you need to yell the entire time, and that if you're not at your highest decibel level the entire time, then no one's going to listen. That's also monotone, it's just a different tone. That also makes it very difficult for the listener to know what's important and what's not important. I tend to fall into this trap. That's why I always am hoarse. I never have a voice. So that's but it's something to be cognizant of. Again, speeding up, slowing down. A guy told me recently that his wife asked him why he's always listening to the basketball game. And he's like, I haven't listened to a basketball game on the radio in 20 years. What are you talking about? Turns out he was listening to like Rabbi Rosner Stuff Yomi Shir. It was just so exciting. He was so excited about the learning that his wife assumed it was Marv Albert. Like she couldn't, that's great. I mean, that's really fantastic. Again, the voice is often a reflection of Avas HaTorah, not necessarily in a reality as much as it is in perception. Like people will say, wow, I can really see I can hear the Avas HaTorah in your voice. That's something you want people to hear. You want them to hear the Avas HaTorah in your voice. So that's point number two, is controlling your voice. Point number three, And please tell me if you think that I'm missing any major points. This is just what came to mind. There's no like manual or book that I'm following. Point number three is, and again, this is true of any shir, not just halacha, but is reading the room, you know, making eye contact with the talmidim one at a time. Also, not just like scanning the room like that, but like, you know, seeing one person and another person, so that you could draw people back in. Reading the room when people are getting bored, when they're falling off. You know, don't always stick to your script. I know Rav Shechter, a lot of times we appreciate our Rosh Yeshiva here as great, great Talmidei Chachamim, because they are great, great Talmidei Chachamim. But what we sometimes fail to appreciate is that they are also great, great teachers. And they are excellent at teaching Torah. They're excellent at capturing our attention and maintaining our attention, right? Meaning, when I was in Rosh Chodesh Yeshiva, he said shiur for 2 hours every day. There are very few things I would listen to for 2 hours straight. You know, Rav Rosenzweig also, like all the Rebbeim that managed to capture people's attention, pay attention to what they do. And I remember Rav Shachter would always, when he saw people's eyes glazing over, that's when he threw a story in. Right? That's when he would say, oh, and this Sefer, and he would just tell that he reads a lot. He reads like a lot of rabbinic biographies and things like that. So he has and obviously has a lot of life experience. So he has a lot of amazing stories. But he's strategic about the stories. Or if he sees that everybody's confused, or he lost people because he was maybe going a little quickly, which he sometimes tends to do. If he sees that he lost people, he'll say, "Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Hashem created the world in 6 days, and then He wrote the Torah, and then He gave us the Torah, and in the Torah it said Ki Yikach Yeshisha, and that's why we're learning Maseches Kiddushin, and the first Mishnah Kiddushin, like, you know, start from the basics, and that like brings people back in also, that like, okay, now we're gonna have the basic recap of the sugya, and let people know." You know, in middle, if you lost me until now, now's the time to pay. That meaning now it's a new Indian. Now you could jump right back in. Now we can, because no one wants to be sitting somewhere where they feel like they're not gaining anything, they're not doing anything. No one wants to be sitting in a chabur or a shir where they feel like, oh God, I'm lost, and then there's just a waste of time. No one wants to feel unproductive. So if you know, someone once asked me about giving daf yomi shir. They said, like, what do you do with, like, the daffin that, like no one chaps? Like, the Magid Shir doesn't chap, the people listening don't chap. You know, like, what do you do about such daffin? I mean, there are certain daffin and shas that cannot be learnt or taught in 40 to 45 minutes. It just cannot be. It just can't. So what do you do with such daffin? So my etza always was, obviously, try to get through the daff, but make sure that everybody walks away with something. No one should feel, I woke up at 5:30 a.m. after a rough day at work yesterday, and I came to shul for 45 minutes to have just things go right over my head, and I have nothing to show for it. There should be some maisa, some psak halacha, some something, some vort, some ha'ara, something that everybody could understand, that everybody could walk away with. No one wants to feel like they're just like left in the dust, and there's nothing for them. So I think it's important as a way of, you know, reading the room, see when people are losing it, and let them know when there's a good time, even though you wish everybody was in it the whole time and everybody's following the whole time, but it's not always the reality. So make sure they know when they can jump back in. If you came here just to hear one thing, you know, or you could summarize everything we did today in 3 sentences, and they are, meaning those kinds of things are very helpful to people, I find, at least. Fourth, and this is also, again, not unique to halacha, but especially important to halacha, is clarity. Clarity meaning in terms of, you know, there's an old saying, I forgot how it goes, I think it's something like, start by telling people what you're going to say, then say it, and then tell them what you said. Meaning that you should set the expectation in advance. You know, okay, we're going to talk about the topic of, I don't know, whatever topic of the day, pick a topic.
Tip of Avera.
Mitzvah Ba'aveira. Okay, so we're going to talk about the topic of Mitzvah Ba'aveira. We're going to go through three basic shittos from Rishonim about how Mitzvah Ba'aveira works, and four nafkaminas between them. Okay, something like that, right? Just set the stage, and then actually go through the shittos and the Rishonim. I mean, obviously start with the sugyas and the Gemara. Whatever. We're not going to get into that right now. But go through exactly what you say you can go through, and then recap. Okay, so three shittos quickly are the Ritva, right? And just run through the sugya and go through the nafkaminas, and should be able to be recapped in a short amount of time. And that's part of clarity. Meaning, if I mentioned previous times that we've met that, like, I always like to think in outlines. Yeah.
If you say a scenario in the beginning, that are you able to mesh with also letting them know what.
Yeah, for sure. Meaning, what I'll do often is, let's say with like the rabbi's desk shear. So I'll say not just scenario, but like an actual halacha l'maisa shayla. So right away, everyone's forming opinions. Where do I open up a Shulchan Aruch? What do I have to look at? So someone will say, you have to look at the sugya of Kibbutz Aveim, and this one says, well, you also have to look at the sugya of Mekalas Chavero, or what, I don't know, whatever. Shayla is always dynamic, so they always have like a lot of points. So then we'll say, okay, so let's first go through this inyan, and it's halachic application to the sugya. Then inyan number two, and it's halachic application to the sugya. And then the interplay between the two inyanim and how they and whether they're going to be able to impact our shaila. And then you go out and you do it. Meaning right after the hook. Meaning when you begin the content, for sure start with like a roadmap. And as you're going through, people should be able to see the roadmap unfolding. Meaning they should be able to see. It is a great maila to be able to give a shir where for like, let's say it's an hour long shir, for 59 minutes people are totally confused as to where you're going, and then in that last minute you bring it all together in such a way it's like, wow, how did everything just fall into place? How did that just happen? If you try that with high schoolers, they're not going to be around for minute 60. Meaning, it's a mile when you see people who are able to give a shiur like that. I remember Ramesh Shapiro. I once heard Ramesh Shapiro give a shiur for the first 20 minutes, 10 minutes or so. I thought like he's talking like we're a bunch of kindergartners. He's talking so slow, just like giving us like basic yesodos, and then like. For the next half hour, my head was like spinning. Like he was all over the place. And then the last few minutes, like, it just all, like, everything, like in those machines where you drop all the different coins in and all the coins fall into the right place. Like, everything just fell into the right place and everything was, it was dazzling. It was mamish amazing. But again, your NCSYers will not be around for the dazzle. I forgot something in my room, I gotta go back. They're not gonna be interested in sticking around for that. So it would be much more helpful if, probably in this light to have it unfold, in front of them. And make sure you hit, the key points, in terms of clarity. Make sure that, you may not get to everything, but don't miss like the most crucial things. And in halacha, it's critical that you not miss the bottom line, right? If you start with like a halacha question, and then you go through a sugya, and it's like, but wait, what do we do? Like, oh, I forgot to tell you that there's an answer to the halacha, that there's a there's an approach, or there are several approaches. A fifth point in this, a friend of mine who was listening to the first two of these talks. Reached out to me, a friend of mine who gives a lot of shiurim. He's a balabas, but he gives a lot of shiurim, and he's a Talmud Chacham. He said, you got to emphasize that it's not about you. It's about whoever you're talking to. And this is, I know this was deeply personal for him, because here's a guy, he's a busy lawyer, he works very, very hard, and he works very hard preparing shiurim. Like, his shiurim are full of marmakomos. You could see that he studied the topic and thought about it from every angle. He's a real, Rav Rosenzweig Talmud, and, he really thinks about things, and Rav Lichtenstein Talmud, he really thinks about things from every possible angle, and, he really, really, really worked hard on the sugya. And sometimes he'll come to his Friday night chabura, and he'll start presenting, and, one of the people at the chabura, or several of the people at the chabura, get caught up in, one of the Marmakomos that he wasn't even planning on really like delving into too much, but like that's what they're focused on, and they just can't get past it, and it derails him a little bit. But that's where they need to be learning at that point, because it's a hanacha in the entire sugya for him to be able to say his big chiddush, but they're not accepting the hanacha. So it's, you know, if they're not there, if they're not going to accept the Yesodos, they're not going to understand the Yesodos, the big Chiddush is not going to matter. So sometimes you have to sacrifice what you came to do. Because, you know, you want to say the big Chiddush, but the Talmidim don't have the Yesodos down, so you have to scrap it. And that's, by the way, one of the reasons why giving a shiur without an audience is so difficult, is that since it is all about the listener, and it's very important that you actually see the listener and you get to see how they're reacting to things and what bothers them and what, you know, what they're shtelling to, you know, what they're connecting with. Like I always think for myself, like the Mishnah shir that I give is like impossible, because I'm just talking to my recorder every morning when I'm giving me a Mishnah Yomi that all Mishnah asked me to do. The old daf is no big deal, because I mean, it's just a daf yomi that I give in shul, so there are actual people there, so it's much easier. But when you're talking to like nobody, it's very, very hard. Someone told me in December, they said that Yerushalmi yomi was starting. I'm like, you just don't tell me that, right? Wait till we finish Mishnayos, then you can talk to me about that. I'm not interested. And the final thing, I think this is very critical, and again, it's not really so much about halacha as much as it is about presenting anything, and this is true of any Rebbe that's giving a shir, any rabbi that's speaking, but I would say especially true for you guys, because really, 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 what the guys get in NCSY Kollel out of the chaburas is a genuine Torah relationship with you, and an appreciation of what a Ben Torah is through you. Now, not that you should feel like you are the, you know, human embodiment of Torah, and that you are God's gift, because after all, my you know, the 10th grader thinks that I'm the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world, and doesn't understand the difference between me and Rav Schechter, but that relationship, that connection, where I think even in the Torah, meaning I think a lot of times guys get this balance wrong, they think that you can only connect through schmoozing and batling, and when you're learning, then you're not really connecting, you're just doing your job, you know, when you're learning. I think through the Torah, you need to be able to show who you are. You know, the Gemara in Shabbos, Tav Kofei, Rabbi Yochanan says that Anochi is an Atrikun, that Anon Nafshi, Ksavis Yahavis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that in the Torah, I'm giving myself over in the Torah. So it stands to reason that Mahu Afata, right? In the way that Hashem teaches Torah, we're also supposed to teach Torah. That's why the Gemara says Mahu Bechinam Afata Bechinam, which seems why it does pretty well. but I'm just joking. But it stands to reason that if Mahu Bechinam Afata Bechinam, then Mahu then afata, that when you're giving Torah, give yourself, give your, who you are. People should feel like they know you, even if they never had a private conversation with you. If they've heard you share enough Torah, they've heard you talk and learning enough, and they should feel like they know you, like they know your personality, they know what you find funny, they know your favorite food, they know like things just in the examples that you give, in the in the way that you express yourself. Rabbi Kamenetsky once had a Rebbe's meeting in DRS where he told the Rebbeim, he said, I know this may sound a little bit strange, but I would like every single Rebbe in the yeshiva to have a shtick. Like, what? Yeah, everyone should have a shtick. Like, when guys talk about, oh, I remember that Rebbe's shir, they should refer back to something that was unique, something that was different, something that was really the personality of that Rebbe in the shir. For me, it was, I would always make these long scenarios at the beginning of each sugya. Meaning we do, let's say, sugi b'iyun for a whole week. So on Sunday morning or Monday morning, whatever was the first day of yeshiva that week, I'd hand out like this long like story incorporating the guys in the class, usually making fun of them, sometimes going over the line. But I look back at some of them, I'm like, it's amazing I kept my job for 18 years. But you know, it was a fun, engaging way in order to introduce the sugya. Like if we were doing mitzvah ba'aveira, so I'll pick a mitzvah that a kid is likely to do through an aveira that he's likely to, you know, tell the whole story about his friends advising him, no, you better not do that. And so, you know, and then discuss it in the context of that story, where we, you know, I use that to introduce all of the yesodos of the sugya in a non-threatening way, meaning you're not reading anything inside, you're just talking about, you know, conceptually what would happen in a fun and engaging way. And like ad hayom, I mean, I still get, just a couple of weeks ago, I have a Talmud who's a Rebbe in a yeshiva in a school in Cleveland, and he was teaching the same, I guess the same masechta that we did when he was in 11th grade, and he dug up all of these packets, and he's like, these are amazing, you know, he was like going through, like, you know, it was like very nostalgic. What was nostalgic about it? Because the learning was so great? No, what was nostalgic about it was that was our shtick, that was the thing. My son was telling me that another shtick that one of his chaverim had, maybe I won't say that in case it's real, whatever, okay. But, you know, it's good to have, you know, like, there's a Rebbe in TRS that every kid knows. He tells them, Bepe Mali, right on the first day, you better study hard, you better try your best, and if you don't, Toblerone chocolate. I like Toblerone chocolate. That's the way to bribe me. Now, whether he can actually be bribed with Toblerone chocolate or not, I don't know. Yeah, you say yes. but it's an awesome shtick, because like every kid knows, and like, right, it puts a smile on your face when you think about that. So like it's good to have to have shtick. Tell personal stories. Be human. You know, and you can use humor. But remember, even as you're showing your personality, I think there's an important caveat. Remember to always be deferential. Even the opinion that you don't understand or the opinion that you're questioning is the opinion of a great, great gadol, a rishon or an achron. You know, so remember that. I remember when I was in 10th grade, there was a boy in the class that said something like, "But Rebbe, that makes absolutely no sense." And Rabbi Kamenetsky, who was my Rebbe in 10th grade, stopped everything. He looked at me and said, "You cockroach, you dirt between the toenails of this gadol." He started, like, I don't think he would talk that way anymore, but I remember that from 10th grade. Meaning, and his like, you're going to talk that way about a region or an acronym? He said, what you mean to say is that your tiny, minuscule, feeble mind can't begin to comprehend what this giant... Now, okay, I don't think he would still talk that way, but it really made an impression. That's the way one is supposed to speak about Gedolei HaRishonim and Achronim as well. And really, the truth is, you should have kavod for everybody. You should... I find that... especially high school, all I know is high school boys, meaning in terms of chinuch, in terms of, like, I never taught elementary school, I never taught girls, but I find that they say men always want kavod, and they're always interested in kavod. I think that starts in high school. High school boys want kavod, meaning they want to be respected, they want to be heard, they want to feel like their opinion matters, they want to feel like you're not dismissing them just because on the outside they may look like they're a little more rebellious or they're a little like that. You know, I always give the example, I had a boy in one of my, more than once, but one case in particular that I'm thinking of, who never wore tzitzis, right? So I used to do a thing in the shir that I would just randomly on random days bring in a Dunkin' Donuts, and I would just give donuts to whoever was wearing tzitzis. I didn't punish anyone for not. I would just give a free donut to whoever was wearing tzitzis. It changed the, like, it went from like 30% wearing tzitzis to 95%. There's only one holdout, like to like 98%, 97%, whatever the numbers are. One holdout. Everyone else would wear tzitzis every day, because once every 2 weeks they might get a free donut if I do what. So it wasn't about the donut; it was about the recognition that you know, that's wearing. So I remember one kid who came up and he started untucking his shirt to show. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I want to show you my tzitzis." I'm like, "You don't have to show me your tzitzis. Just if you tell me you're wearing tzitzis, you're wearing tzitzis." And he was like, "What? You believe me? Like, if you're gonna lie for a donut, you know, that's your problem. But yeah, I believe you. I mean, if you tell me you're doing it." And like that's, you know, sometimes like when you're you know, working on developing the kesher. Like, that's when I got it. Meaning, when it, the impression I got was that no one ever trusted him. Like, his parents didn't believe him, his rebbeim don't believe him, no one trusted him. That was the first time someone actually respected him and said, oh, if you're telling it to me, then I believe you. Yeah. So, and it's important to always have kavod for people, again, especially high school kids. So again, to review, I said we were going to say six things, and we said six things. So the six things that we discussed were, first of all, to make sure that the opening, that you're open with something engaging. Second, using your voice, modifying your voice properly. Third, reading the room. Fourth, clarity. Let them see the outline unfold. Fifth, it's not about you, it's about the listener. And sixth, make sure you give yourself over in your presentation as well. Everyone should have tremendous hatzlacha. I look forward to seeing you on the NCSY Kollel when you're way into the summer already. And yeah.
Does Rebbe feel there's a role of interactiveness in the chabur like we're having this summer?
For sure.
How should one do that now?
I mean, you have to control it, but you have to see how it goes. It depends on the... Look, if you have a high-level chabur, it's probably a lot easier. In terms of the interactions, because first of all, a lot of the kids probably have some knowledge that they're, you know, that they're talking from, and they'll also know when to, like when you say, okay, but let's get back in it, they'll be able to do that. It's very hard to just sit and listen without being able to, you know, we had a meeting of certain YU leadership types, you know, about Torah values or something, and they, as part of the meeting, one of the things they had us do is they had you like turn to the person next to you, and they said, the person should look the person in the eye, and the person should just speak for 1 minute about whatever topic, and you're not allowed to interrupt them for a whole minute. You ever try this? 1 minute, you think it's easy, right? Someone is talking to you for 1 minute. I was jumping out of my skin. Like, it wasn't even someone I had that much in common. You know, it was like a student leader from Stern. But, like, what she was saying, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I know that guy. He's my cousin's brother, you know? Like, you know, like just don't interrupt. I mean, it's very hard to sit and listen and just listen the whole time. You know, I think when there's nothing that's better than active learning. You just have to, depending on the topic and depending, you know.
Are there certain types of questions that can get kids like more than just a yes or no answer on what they think?
Yeah, I think very often you should, when you're asking something that could be answered with a yes or no, say, and be prepared to back up your question with, you know, your answer with an idea. And then, you know, or with an explanation or with a proof or whatever. Meaning you just learned to text. Do you think the Rashi is saying this or that? And don't just tell me this or that. Tell me why. Tell me why you think that. Meaning you have to prompt it. A lot of times, you know, people make this mistake on dates. they just ask a series of yes or no questions. It's like, I prepared like 10 questions and the date's over after 30 seconds. You know, like, and then you talk about like, it should be conversational. It should be more open-ended and, you know, more suggesting mahalich and how to answer. Yeah, think about those formulations that we spoke about last time, thinking about formulations. You should think about formulations of questions also. Whatever is planned is much better than what's not planned, I find. And if it's planned and experienced once, like you once went through it already, and you saw how it worked, that's the best. Like I give two drushes every Shabbos, one downstairs and one in the early minyan, one upstairs in the main minyan. The second one is always better, because I see which jokes fell flat and which Divrei Torah were like, wow, that's enlightening, and which ones were like, wow. You know, like you get to, so if it's planned and it's if it's been practiced, that's really, but even just the way you ask questions should be planned, I think. Okay. Hatzlacha Rabbah, everybody.
Thank you very much.